Welcome to Cristaldi's Crush. I'm Jonathan Cristaldi, star of a future sitcom called Cristaldi's Corner, a show about a kid obsessed with Kilgore trout from Kurt Vonnegut's Breakfast of Champions, with co-star Michael Keaton, who plays my faithful companion, a giant sloth. Okay, so I'm really upset, and I want to get this off my chest. I have been watching Everybody's Live with John Mulaney on Netflix and shaking my head. Why? Well, I've noticed that no matter who he interviews, he never asks them any questions about what they're actually doing or what they're up to. You know, celebrities come on, they banter, they talk, they take phone calls, and that's about it. So why am I upset? Well, that's basically this show. You know, I started recording this show like years before John Mulaney was born. Years before he and Nick Kroll started reading the stage directions in front of the audience on stage in their hit Broadway show, Oh, Hello. All right. Okay. Enough about me. All right. Let's get to the show. So, for my first question for my guest today, my guest is Rebecca Weinberg, the winemaker at Quintessa Winery in Rutherford, California. That's where we are. Today, in the real news, the Pope died. Pope Francis, the progressive Pope who, in the words of the New York Times, catalyzed the Catholic Rite in the U.S. I don't know what that word means. Do you?
Catalyzed?
Yeah.
Galvanized?
I'll go with you. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that context?
Like excited them?
Excited them, spurred them to action.
See, did you go to a like a good school?
I did study chemistry.
Yeah, I went to, you know, a public school in upstate New York, and when I got to my first college writing class, I think the professor was like, "Have you ever taken a writing class before?" And I was like, "I don't think so." All right, so That's the big news in the world. The Pope is dead. I guess my big question for you is, well, who's going to bless the wine in your cellars?
Oh, good question. You know, I hadn't thought about that. You know, in fact, we bless it ourselves.
It's blessed.
We bless it ourselves.
Blessed
we bless it as
wine.
A team. Yeah. We do a, instead of doing a blessing of the grapes at the opening of harvest, we do a opening ceremony. And so we bless it ourselves. We've decided to do it internally as opposed to inviting an outside.
Do you open something already in the cellar and like spray it all over the grapes?
What do you? No, I didn't. I do. So we're a native yeast house.
Oh, right.
So not inoculating, but I will say like when we bring in the first grapes of the year, which is always Sauvignon Blanc, and we do that just like small internally with the cellar team. And I bring a champagne to toast it. I do always pour some into the press too. And
yes.
In my head, I'm like, it's not going to hurt that fermentation.
Interesting. We're learning something new about the quote unquote native start here at Quintessa. Okay. All right. That's fine. Well, back to the news, right? Yeah. So
that's
world
real
is
news.
Talking about, right, the dead Pope and Wine Spectator's headline. And I usually go to Wine Spectator first because, like, that's the wine world's only real news source, I guess, unless you've got some other big news source you pay attention to. But the big news there is that Chateau Lascombes is making an all Merlot Margaux.
Whoa.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Big news. What does that mean, Rebecca?
I mean, good on them, trying something new. I mean, it's certainly equally as impactful to the world.
Why? Why
as
is
the Pope? No.
I think for the wine world, yes. People are like going, oh my God, the Pope is dead, and they're hugging each other, and they've never met the Pope, they don't know him, but they're all acting like they know him, and people in Margaux are like, he is making all Merlot. Oh my God. And they're shaking their heads and they're hugging each other and they don't know what to do.
And sure. I mean, the world is changing. Certainly the climate that we're experiencing, the weather patterns that we're experiencing now are different than they were 100 years ago. So why not try something?
Sure. So for people who don't know why an all Merlot Margaux is revolutionary. Is that?
Is it revolutionary?
I don't. Maybe not.
I mean, is it? Wait, is it the law there about what they're allowed
well,
to grow?
It's like nobody does it. It's like Cabernet is, you know, the king blending variety, and it's like, why would you not use all of the best grapes available to you? Are you crazy? And their answer is, I didn't read the article, but I assume they've got good answers.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's happening in the world, in the news. Let's do a commercial break. And then when we come back, we'll actually talk. We'll get into it.
I'm Phil Rizzuto for The Money Store, where qualified homeowners can borrow up to any amount for any purpose.
I already have a mortgage loan on my house. Can I borrow additional money?
Yes, we can lend you additional money on a second mortgage loan or refinance your first mortgage. Let me have the facts, and I'll suggest alternative long-term repayment plans.
For information about homeowner first or second mortgage loans, call The Money Store toll-free. Dial 1-800-221-9000.
Well, all right. Welcome back to Cristaldi's Crush. This is the world's only podcast about wine, spirits, and food that you actually want to listen to. Today, we're recording from Quintessa Winery in Rutherford in the heart of Napa Valley. I'm joined by Rebecca Weinberg. She is the winemaker here and has been for the last 57 years. Let's start with the obvious question. I hear you're a Mel Brooks fan.
Oh, of course.
Yeah?
Yes.
Do I have that right?
Yes.
Do you have a favorite Mel Brooks movie?
Oh, Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles. Okay, how would you rank Blazing Saddles, Spaceballs, Young Frankenstein?
Oof, Frankenstein. Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, and Spaceballs, in that order.
Okay. May the Schwartz be with you. What's your do you have like a favorite line or a favorite moment from Blazing Saddles? Or,
well, I mean, I was a kid when it came out, and definitely the campfire scene with the beans. Like that was quite impactful to me.
Hopefully you know what Rebecca's talking about. And if you don't, go find it on the internet and watch it, Blazing Saddles. It makes me think to ask you if you think Mel's humor would work today, if he were just starting out, or would he like be canceled by lunchtime?
Oh, God. God, that's a good, I didn't think about that. No, he would work. He would work. He's always so funny and respectful of everyone. But would that like Borscht Belt sensibility still resonate as much today?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they did History of the World Part 2. Finally, officially, yeah, you're shaking your head. You're not super. Nick Kroll was the writer, as I mentioned him earlier. What's your take on that series?
To be honest, I didn't finish it.
Mm.
Not your cup of tea.
Yeah. No, I mean, it wasn't not, but it just didn't get me. I think there was something, I'm thinking back to like growing up and watching all those Mel Brooks movies and just laughing out loud.
Yeah. Okay. Right. It's like classic, old school humor done in a really done with like great delivery,
mm-hmm. Great delivery, great timing, the length of everything, like the length of every bit was right.
Yeah. I can't think of it right now, but there, like, I'm thinking of a scene with Dom DeLuise in, I don't know what, but like, there was some lizard involved, and I'm like, I can't even remember exactly what happened, but all I know is I think I probably watched it over and over, like 150 times, and it was as funny every single time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's still funny every time.
Yeah, I could see that. Oh, man. Oh, sorry, Nick Kroll. I think nice work, but maybe I wouldn't rewatch the episodes as many times.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe it's because it wasn't his original like voice.
I mean, tall order, right? Though, yeah. But brilliant that that Mel Brooks was the intro, right? I mean, I don't know. It doesn't get any better than that. Okay, well. Yeah, what else do you watch? Are you like a Netflix person?
Oh yeah, I do watch a lot. I think I like some like highbrow stuff, but honestly, like more lowbrow.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes escapist, especially nowadays. I think I need to escape. Yeah, like fantasy.
Inter- Interesting.
Fantasy, bit of action, or like sci-fi.
Like what's a show you're watching?
Oof. Right now, there's not. Well, what am I? Not much going on right now, to be honest. Nothing super new. So I might watch again, like, of course, like all the Lord of the Rings stuff. Rings of Power. All of that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you bring some of that to your winemaking?
Of course.
Yeah, the magic.
The magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The magic, the world building.
Do you have a wand that you use when you wave, you go out in the vineyards?
No.
Why not?
But actually, it just reminded me. So I worked in New Zealand, and I don't know if the spiders there are like extra crazy, but when you're walking through the vineyard, when you're the first person to walk through a row in the morning, there's a lot of spider webs. Hmm. I used to pick up a stick and like hit it before me so that the stick would get the spider webs instead of me.
That's freaky.
It is. It's not a great way to wake up, to walk right into face first.
Oh,
a big spider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there big spiders too?
Yeah.
Hmm. So when there's this phrase, material mm-hmm. other than grapes. Mm-hmm. So like when the harvest is happening, sometimes other things like end up with the grapes, mm-hmm. like snakes and spiders probably in New Zealand. Yeah.
I think spiders here too.
Got it. Yeah. Oh, geez. Great.
Yeah.
So what do you think that adds to the wine?
Nutrients for the fermentation. Try not to think about it.
Great. Don't you love the wine industry? I find that that the wine industry is rife with cliches. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Here, I'll give you a few examples. Every bottle tells a story. You know, we let the vineyards do the talking, right? You know, our wine is balanced with feminine qualities. So being a female.
Oh my God. I think I probably said almost all of those things in my mind.
So then, okay, you explain
maybe
to me.
Maybe not the last one.
Well, no, let's take the last one. Since you're a female, mm-hmm. can you tell me about wine's feminine qualities? What is that all about?
You know, I don't know what they mean when they say that. I don't.
Really? I'm just so surprised by that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm working on ungendering my wine description labels, or like descriptive words. I don't think I use masculine, feminine anymore. I'll say things more like muscular and brawny, structured versus elegant and finesse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I'll share with you the tasting note word mm-hmm. that makes me really uncomfortable. It's sexy.
Oh, I know.
Like I read the word sexy and I think to myself, what were you thinking when you wrote that? Like, because I know what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're thinking.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's not a good word, because you don't know what everyone's thinking.
Oh, it's a sexy wine. Like, really?
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
When my grandmother is reading my article, my vintage report, and she comes across the word sexy 15 times, she's going to call me up and be like, dude.
You're talking about voluptuous tannins.
Well, she's going to be like, the Pope just died. So not only do you need to go to confession right now and just clear your mind, man. No, that's all right. My grandmother wouldn't say that because she's dead. So too bad. So she can't even read my tasting notes. And I would have to go to confession, though, because I was raised Catholic. Were you raised Catholic?
No.
No. That was a flat no. Were you raised in raised in any religion?
Yeah, I'm Jewish.
Oh, Weinberg.
Weinberg. Rebecca Weinberg. That's why I was laughing.
No, I got it. I was a setup for you. We have to talk about that. We have to talk about the fact that your name is Weinberg.
I know.
Do you emphasize the wine?
No, I don't. And I'm going to, this is going to sound like a lie, but I actually didn't think about it until someone else pointed it out.
Who?
The first person who hired me, like my first internship. She said, Kara Morrison, she's the director of winemaking at Sonoma-Cutrer. And she had hired me. She was the assistant winemaker down at Jekyll in Monterey County. I was applying remotely. You know, I was in college in Minnesota, and I was faxing my resume and cover letter, and I had no experience. And she told me that the only reason she looked at my resume is that my name was Weinberg. And I was like, what?
Oh, wow.
Oh.
So were you like not sure whether to be flattered?
Oh,
or...
I was like, great. It was a great first experience. But I was also a little embarrassed. I hadn't occurred to me.
I think it's pretty remarkable, actually. Would you say that you have like pretty good self-awareness?
I thought I did. I'm not sure.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Washington, D.C.
And where did you go to public school or private school there?
I went to a private school.
That's why you knew what that word earlier in the yes. broadcast was that I can't even remember.
Catalyst.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And so how did going into wine from Washington, D.C. happen?
Okay, so I was always into science, like every other Gen X young girl. I wanted to be a marine biologist, as we all did. I thought I would be a professor and take sabbaticals all the time. You know, and then I got older, I was going to study biology. And my family took a trip to San Francisco for spring break when I was 16 years old. And we did a day trip to Napa Valley. And I got the idea of being a winemaker.
So what did you see as, I feel like a 16-year-old going with their family to Napa would probably more be like, this sucks. Like, what are we doing? I can't drink wine yet. I mean, what happened?
Yeah, we were at the back. I was tasting a little bit. We were with a family friend and he's an Australian and he is very into wine. He had gone to Roseworthy. He had studied chemistry. And so he was talking to me about fermentation and winemaking and the science behind it. And I was like, oh my God, this is something I could do. This would be so cool. I got the idea. And then I went to college. I studied chemistry and biology.
Kind of with the idea that you were going to do this?
Kind of with the idea that I was going to do this, but really had no connections. And just was like, once I graduate, I had a chemistry professor who I told about my interest in being a winemaker, and he's into wine. And he was like, great, you go work a harvest in California, and then you go to UC Davis and study viticulture and enology. And I was like, yeah, sure.
He's like, you were like, don't you mean like UC Santa Barbara?
I wish.
Chico State? I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of remarkable, but it was not because you had tasted something that was a revelation. It was the science. It was the intrigue of like all of that stuff.
Yeah. We had wine growing up, but my family's not wine collectors or wine, serious wine. No one would have known, you know, you had a bottle of wine maybe at a dinner, but no one like paid attention to what the wine was. So I didn't come at it first at that young age from the drinking. I wish I have so many friends who grew up in these families that would have their parents have wine cellars. They're drinking great wines growing. No, that was not my experience.
No, me either. But I've caught up.
I've tried to catch up.
I definitely have caught up. I mean, I've caught up just in terms of like tasting. And, you know,
and
you have too, though. I mean, you like, okay, so I'll do these things where like I have to come and sit down and taste 40 or 50 wines in a lineup for a professional tasting. But you'll do that kind of like a lot. You'll do that often, but tasting out of barrels and tanks.
But I'm tasting unfinished wines.
Right.
Yes.
God.
And so I get to taste quicker and nobody needs to read my notes.
That's fair. That must be nice. I honestly have a really hard time understanding where a wine is going or what quality the wine is tasting these unfinished wines. I've done it now a lot at being a critic, that people show me samples and we talk through it and we'll taste a bunch of different stuff, blending components maybe of an unfinished wine. But man, I can't wrap my head around it. I'm like, great. That was fun. I need to taste the finished thing. How do you do it? What are the things that, what's different about tasting? Oh, you all right?
Yeah. No, I just kicked the table.
Just kicked the table. That's all. That's what that was. There's no bird flew into a window. It's all good. Can you talk about the difference between tasting unfinished, like unfinished wine versus finished wine?
Yeah. So it's very different. I think it's based on, you have to build up your like memory bank of experience of tasting the wines so young and then following them older. Cause you, this is like the secret to winemaking is that you are guessing a lot of the time.
What?
Hopefully my boss is not listening.
No one's listening.
No one's
listening to this. Just about 5 million people. Those are the Nielsen numbers anyway. Yeah.
No, you have to do, you know, I'm tasting this now and I can imagine where it's going to go. And I have this bank of knowledge of the place or different harvests and following it through. That's why it is there's a lot of power in staying with the same vineyard for a long period of time.
Yeah, right. And I mentioned you'd been here about 57 years now. Is that about right?
I wish. Now I'm coming into my 11th harvest.
11. Tessa. All right. So you've had 11 tries, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you think you're doing?
I think it gets easier. Yeah. No, I think because you have that experience and that knowledge and you can better guess where things are going to go.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So by 22, you'll be like, you won't even show up.
Yeah,
you'll be like, just point at things.
Yeah. Just be like, FaceTime me.
Yeah. Just Zoom blending again. Oh, God.
Come in on my hovercraft.
Yeah, totally. Okay, before we go any further, I guess we should talk about the obvious elephant in the room. You know, the one thing that's probably on everyone's mind listening to this, the big scandal. You know, when things got jammed up, you know. Do you have an opinion about what happened?
Wait, what happened?
Well, you know, in Spaceballs, when they jam the radar, you know, and a giant jar of raspberry jam splatters all over the radar screen, Colonel Sanders tastes it and confirms it's raspberry, to which Dark Helmet, who's played by Rick Moranis, famously replies, "Only one man would dare to give me the raspberry, Lone Star." Now, don't you think that if Mel Brooks was actually into wine, that it would have been blackberry jam?
Oh, cassis would have been blackberry jam. Do we know he wasn't into wine?
That's what I'm saying. We don't, but I just feel like raspberry was a choice that a wine person would not have gone with.
Yeah.
I bet Mel Brooks is like was probably a Scotch guy.
Yes. Maybe. A little Manischewitz?
Yeah, probably some Manischewitz.
Right time, yeah.
Jack Daniels, him and Frank Sinatra, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What's the best burger in Napa Valley, as far as you're concerned?
Ooh. Okay, this can be a controversial take. But I think Red Rock.
What is Red Rock?
Red Rock is a little burger joint. They also have good salads, like that's a little pro tip, on Lincoln and Main Street.
In downtown Napa.
In downtown. Well, yeah. I mean, quote unquote downtown.
Right. The city of Napa.
The city of Napa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. We're laughing, but if you haven't visited, come visit and, you'll laugh too. Are you reading any books right now?
I am. I'm in two books right now. One is like a nice wine book. I'm rereading Terry Teese's Reading Between the Vines.
Oh, wow.
Love the way he writes and the way he writes about wine. And then the other one is like a fantasy novel.
Yeah. Are you going to share what it is?
The Sarah Moss Throne of Glass.
Okay. I can't even ask a proper question about this. So maybe you frame a question and then answer it.
About that.
It's
a great series. And I'm like holding the next book for myself.
What would you ask yourself then?
It's this world building. So they built a full world. There's magic and tyranny and, you know, creatures, but also real, like, multi-layered heroes that are not perfect.
It sounds like SimCity meets Diablo, which is what I grew up on, which is like these old computer games, SimCity and Diablo. But anyway, all right, I can jive with that. Mm-hmm. All right, we're getting to the end, I promise. I'm sorry, this has been awful for everybody listening, including Rebecca here in the studio. we're gonna get near the end here with a segment I call Sip, Chug, Spill.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So I'm going to name three wines, and you got to tell me which one you're going to sip, which one you'll chug, and which one you'll spill. This is not too bad.
Okay.
All right. So Yellowtail Shiraz, Cloudy Bay Sauvignon Blanc, and La Marca Prosecco.
Ooh. Well, I would sip the Cloudy Bay.
Hmm. Okay.
I think I would chug the Prosecco.
Hmm.
I guess I have to spill the
other. You got to say it.
I'll spill. Do I have to
spill? Yeah, you got to say
I'll
it.
Spill the yellowtail.
Going to spill it. Oh, man. You know what? I think I'm right there with you. I think I would have done the exact same thing in your shoes. Yep. But I could say that my wine upbringing was on Yellowtail.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. I discovered that in college.
Mm, that's better than what I was drinking in college.
Well, was it?
Boone's Farm. $2 a bottle, or maybe it was $2.99.
Yeah. Original $2 chuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Yellowtail came in magnums, right? So it was a total deal. It's like more bang for your buck. I had so much Yellowtail one summer that I couldn't drink red wine anymore, like for a while. That's how I discovered white wine. Oh, my God. I want to close out, and I want to thank you for spending the time to talk about nothing, basically. I hope you had fun. So let me end on a very serious note here. If you knew exactly what day and time you were going to die, what is the last thing you would eat, and what is the last thing you would drink?
Ooh. Okay. The last thing I would drink would be Ceylon.
That's champagne.
And I think I'd have to have sushi with it.
From? Sushi from where?
Japan.
You have to go to Japan.
I'd have to go to Tokyo.
Okay, so we'd have to, right. Yes. You'd have to make sure you were in Tokyo.
Tokyo.
And with a,
drinking.
With a, like a magnum of Ceylon.
A magnum of Ceylon. Like, yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
That doesn't sound, and a tiny little sushi joint in Ginza. Yeah.
I think we should just do that anyway.
Now I'm going to get worried next time I go to Tokyo. I'm like, uh-oh, is this the end?
No. It's all good. It's all good. You're fine. You're fine because you're a winemaker and you drink very tasty red wine in moderation. We didn't even open this, but there's a bottle of Quintessa 2015 red wine on the table here that I'm staring at. And I know it because we've tasted multiple vintages together, and these are very, very tasty wines. Do you remember what I scored that?
I don't.
I don't either.
Sorry.
Here, I'll look it up real quick. This will be fun. Let's see what... Let's see what Rebecca brought for me. Did she bring one of the higher scoring wines that I gave her?
No, it's not. I know it's not. But it's the wine I wanted to have today.
Let's pour some.
Yeah. It's my first vintage, my first full vintage at Quintessa.
So you brought your first full vintage of wine that you made at Quintessa. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some. You're not. But we're going to have some right now.
Oh, did you catch the sound of the pouring?
Yeah, we got it. 97.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
I gave this wine 97 points.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, here. Oh, cheers. It smells like blackberry jam, not raspberry jam. Yes, it does. Okay. Well, you know, that's how it goes over here. Listen, I hope you are opening something yourself somewhere and that it's really tasty. And if it's red, please just serve it slightly chilled, okay? Just like with a little chill on it. Just stop serving it hot at room temperature.
Yeah.
Rebecca agrees.
I agree. Let it warm up in the glass.
There you go. I want to thank you and everybody here at Quintessa and for doing this. I had a lot of fun. I am the wine writing champion of the world, Jonathan Cristaldi. You've been listening to Cristaldi's Crush podcast. And, you know, no matter how bad it gets, my rock bottom is still your wildest dreams. Ciao for now. Cheers.